We are live on air at Drive to HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals, with over 1,200 shows. That's tons of content right there in front of you, right? So this is your host, Nisha, and I'm on Twitter at the HR Buddy. Today we are having an amazing guest that I have a whole lot of respect personally and professionally, the author of the blog, the HR bartender, Sherlyn Lobby. Sherlyn, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Thank you so much. It's been too long.
I know, right? It's been too long. So I thought, hey, we are about to kick off this year's shows, and I really, really want to talk to Sherlyn at least in the first within the first 3 months, and I got that opportunity. Thank you so much for that.
It's always great chatting with you, and I love some of the work that you're doing with the radio show and out on your blog. You probably don't promote it enough, so I'll do it for you, the HR Buddy. But you have some really great resources out there for people, and hopefully listeners are taking advantage of that.
Oh, thank you so much for that shout-out. So, Sherlyn, you know the drill at Drive Through HR. If there is anyone out there who doesn't know of you, we would appreciate if you can talk a little bit more about you, who you are, and what you do.
All right. Well, first and foremost, I'm a training consultant. I've been in the consulting world now for about 12 or 13 years, focusing primarily on OD and training, leadership and management training programs. So I do that. My clients range from, you know, small firms. I'm so delighted that I have some small companies that have been named great places to work on my client list, and some large organizations that everyone would recognize as household names. I do interesting projects with terrific companies, and I have a lot of fun doing it. So speaking of fun, I also have a lot of fun writing HR Bartender. I started the blog about 6 years ago as a way to just create a conversation around human resources. And I had no idea when I first started blogging that it would sort of morph into what it is today. But it's really terrific to be able to engage with people and, you know, get a conversation going about what's important to human resources and just the working world in general.
Absolutely. It's the number one HR blog out there that I read it daily and gets more insights for me to help me grow professionally and personally, and I'm sure anyone out there who is reading HR Bartender would feel the same. So, Sherlyn, tell us that big news. Your brand new book is out right now, Essential Meeting Blueprints for Managers. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Thank you. Well, the book, yes, as you mentioned, is Essential Meeting Blueprints for Managers, and this has been a long time coming. I wrote a post a month or so ago talking about what it means to go out there and write a book. I've wanted to write a book for a very, very long time, and when I was presented with this opportunity, it felt really right. I really enjoyed the organization that I worked with, the publishing house that I worked with on this, and they were the ones who approached me about writing a book on meetings. Initially, you know, we started talking, and they said, you know, we really think you would be good to write a book on meetings. And I have to say, when they first started talking about meetings, I was like, really? Meetings? but I thought about it, and I said, no, meetings. You know, when we think about one of the things that always happens to us in business, you know, regardless of the kind of business that you do, whether you're internal or you're a consultant, regardless of the role that you play internally, my guess is at some point in time you go to a meeting. And there's a lot of conversation about making meetings go away, but I really think it's more of a focus on let's just have good meetings. Like, I don't mind going to a meeting as long as it's a really good one, and it's productive, and, you know, it's efficient and effective. So I put together this book, and you noticed it. You have a copy. You've been thumbing through it. I feel very fortunate that a lot of my colleagues and friends that I tapped into along the way and said, hey, give me some tips for running great meetings. So it's not just about me, but there's lots of tips and resources in here from friends and business people about how to run a great meeting.
Absolutely. Well, I've gone through the book, and I'm almost halfway through. This is an interesting book that every manager out there should read when it comes to how to make your meetings more productive. So, Sherling, while you were talking about, you know, getting rid of meetings and those conversations that is out there, in fact, I was, I remember going through a Harvard Business Review study where they said, like, the weekly meetings took up around 300K hours per year. So some of them thinking that, yeah, this is going to be a lot of time and it is not going to make any money out of it and it's not productive. And there you are coming with your new book telling people about how to make an effective meetings. So tell us some of the tips and techniques that you have covered in your book. What are some key strategies in order to make a meeting much more productive than before?
A couple of things that I would point out. First of all, you know, the meeting that you're talking about, you know, that weekly, you know, sometimes it's daily. I've worked in organizations where we had a daily meeting, and in the hotel industry where we would all get together prior to, you know, like the day shift or the evening shift and talk about, you know, who were the VIPs coming into the hotel and, you know, that kind of thing. When you think about those daily meetings, you know, some of the tips that we used that were very effective. One, we had it at a strange time. We found that if we had the meeting at like 8 o'clock in the morning, people would be late. But if we had the meeting at 7:55, somehow everybody managed to show up on time. I don't know what it was, but just having that meeting at that off period in time. The other thing is, because we didn't want it to be a long meeting, it was a standing meeting. Mm-hmm. Meaning that everybody came to a centralized location. There were no tables and no chairs. We just stood there. We got the information that we needed, and we dispersed. We moved on. So just when you're thinking about those regularly scheduled meetings, that is one tip that you can use if it's a daily meeting. Weekly meetings, I know from my days in corporate America, that weekly staff meeting often can turn into a snoozer, especially if it gets to the point where, you know, the meeting is just simply people going around the table and talking about stuff because they feel that they need to, not because it's important information that needs to go out there. If you're the leader of that meeting, I would say, if you don't need to have the meeting, don't have it. I worked with a manager one time who would just say, hey, you know, I don't really think we have anything to talk about. Or the other thing is, if we were really busy, maybe with another project, you know, for example, it's budget time and we knew that a lot of the people in the room were also going to be going to multiple budget meetings, he would just say, we don't need to have this meeting because we're going to see each other like three other times this week. So it was putting your resources where it made the most sense. And as we, you know, when you think about today and a lot of the conversation about doing more with less, you want those meetings to be really productive. And you want them to not just be 1 hour because it's always on our agenda. Tuesdays at 3 o'clock, we need to have this particular meeting. If you don't need to have it, then just cancel it.
Absolutely.
And I think that sometimes people are afraid that if they cancel a meeting, they're saying we don't have anything valuable going on. But I don't believe that that's the case. You know, when we think about 52 weeks in a year, it's okay if every once in a while it's like, hey, we're busy with other things, or life just isn't that exciting this week, so we're going to cancel the meeting.
I know, right? So, you know, talking about different meetings, there are tons and tons of meetings out there, and people, as you said, people would call their team not necessarily require that meeting, but then they would definitely have to have that. Maybe 60 minutes and maybe 30 minutes, which is really, really boring if it is for a one-hour meeting. So how much of that duration that you really suggest when it comes to having, this is a standard minutes or duration that you should be having a meeting?
It's a great question. I think some of it has to do with how long, how often mm-hmm. the group meets. So, for example, you know, we were talking about the daily meeting. We only met for 10 minutes. So if the meeting was going to last more than 10 minutes, then it needed to be constructed differently. But we would have regular staff meetings that lasted somewhere in the range of, you know, 45 minutes or something like that. And then I've worked on, like, volunteer projects where because we were dispersed all over the state and we didn't get together as many times, that maybe we would meet once a quarter, but when we met all day. So,
right.
You know, if you think about, well, we could have met once a week, but that would be the equivalent of meeting once a day, you know, or
right.
an all-day
yeah.
meeting. Sorry about that. An all-day meeting. So some of it, I think, has to do with, you know, how often the group meets and where the group is dispersed. I'm on one of SHRM's special expertise panels right now, the Corporate Social Responsibility and Ethics Panel. And
mm-hmm.
we meet quarterly, but because it's a virtual meeting, our meetings last basically an hour. So, you know, take into consideration the technology where the individuals or the group are. I mean, we have individuals on our panel who are based in Nigeria and all over the United States and, you know, those kinds of things. So when you think about the group dynamic, you have to be sensitive to everyone's needs.
Absolutely. Well, while we're talking about, you know, the meetings and the meeting leaders, what are some of the disadvantages when the meeting leader comes unprepared?
If you're the person leading the meeting, one of the things that I believe is that sometimes if you're the meeting leader, maybe you're taking on too much, and that creates these pockets of being disorganized or not having all the information that or playing too many roles. I guess that's a good way to describe it. You know, one of the things that I talk about in the book is if you're the leader of the meeting, feel free to spread responsibilities out amongst the group. It's a great way to get the group engaged, and you don't have to do everything. Like, if you lead the meeting, you don't have to be the person taking meeting minutes. If you're leading the meeting and taking the meeting minutes, you don't have to be the timekeeper. You know, so spread those responsibilities out amongst the group to give everybody roles and responsibilities and give them the opportunity to do something that they enjoy doing, so or that frustrates them. You know, for example, if you have somebody in the group who maybe is always coming to you and saying, you know, I get really frustrated when the meeting gets off track. A legitimate concern about a meeting, you know, if people are in there and the meeting gets off track. If I'm the meeting leader, give that person the responsibility of saying, hey, you know, sometimes I know you're right, and sometimes it's really hard for me to see it until we've already gotten off track. Do me a favor. When we start to get off track, feel free to say to me, why don't we create a parking lot so that we take these things that appear to be off the meeting agenda, we put them over here on the side, and we can deal with them later. And give that person that responsibility to manage the parking lot for the group. You know, now if we get off track, you know, it's because I as the meeting leader need to be responsible for
yeah.
that too, but that person who's in charge of the parking lot, they're sitting there and they're saying, okay, I think that this is still a valid part of the conversation or a valid part of the meeting agenda. So from that standpoint, you can get everyone participating in the meeting and creating those opportunities for a more effective and efficient meeting by giving everyone a role and responsibility. You know, the timekeeper, the person who will make sure that the parking lot or whatever you want to call that, if the meeting starts to get off track. Another thing to consider is somebody who sort of is responsible for making sure that everything is actionable. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've ever sat in a meeting where there's a discussion and people will go, oh, let's do this, and oh, let's do that, and somebody else will go, oh, well, we should do this, or someone else will go, oh, let's do that, and you have, and you're laughing, but my guess is you've sat in one of those meetings yourself where everybody's
yeah,
kind
indeed.
Of going, oh, let's do this, and let's do that, and let's do this, and so you have all of this rich ideas sitting on the table now. Somebody needs to make sure to sit down and say, okay, what are we doing with all of these ideas? We have them all. Do we want to put them on the meeting agenda? Do we want to? So you can give those responsibilities to everyone and say, you're the surmiser, you know, so that at the end of the meeting, if we've listed out six things that we want to do, don't let us leave the room without saying, what are we doing about these six things that we talked about? Do they get put on the next meeting agenda? Are we going to discuss them now? Are we taking some of them off the agenda? What are we doing with them? But I think back to your original question about the meeting leader, sometimes the meeting leader takes all of these roles and responsibilities on themselves. Mm-hmm. And so not only are they running the meeting, but they're keeping the time and they're managing the parking lot and they're surmising this and they're doing that. And I think that that's how the meeting gets away from you.
Right. When trying to do a one-man show, it turns out to be that people will feel like they're not involved in it and they won't be able to contribute much. Sherilyn, the reason why I laughed is that, you know, you're totally right, because when we are on an agenda, people might be thinking like, hey, it's a brainstorming session, so let's bring out my ideas. And some of them think like it's kind of a focus group and kind of giving a fresh perspective and different ideas and all. But as I was saying, you know, there are different types of meetings are there, and you have listed out many of them most of them in your book. But tell our audience, you know, how should they choose the best one that is suitable for their agenda?
It's a great question again. I think that there are only three reasons that you hold a meeting. The first one is to provide information. So if you think about some of those meetings that you have, that really is just about conveying information to people. The regularly scheduled department meeting, that is a meeting that is solely designed to convey information to a group. I also believe that networking meetings are that provide information. Granted, it needs to be an even exchange of information. I think if one person, I think that one of the things that is frustrating to me, and I'm sure it's frustrating to a lot of people, is when someone calls you and says, oh, I'd like to have a networking meeting, and you sit down with them, and it's really, let me tell you all about my business, and I don't, you know, there's no equal exchange. That's called a sales presentation. And there's a place
Correct.
For that. There's a place for that, but it's not a networking meeting. So there's networking meetings, and then the other one is brainstorming. And I believe that brainstorming is also one of those very misunderstood meetings that's out there. You know, when you say we're going to brainstorm, the idea is brainstorming is about putting all the ideas on the table. And evaluating the ideas is something completely different. But where brainstorming meetings often go wrong is that people put an idea on the table and they feel that, okay, now we need to evaluate it and talk about it and everything, and then we'll put another idea on the table. But really, brainstorming is all about putting information out there and then going back and evaluating it after the event. The second reason you hold a meeting is to make a decision. I think one of the most important decision making meetings that we're in is strategic planning. And sometimes some of the things that lead up to strategic planning are, you know, there are pitch meetings. You know, people might pitch ideas. A little bit different than brainstorming, because the brainstorming idea might not necessarily, it might just be an idea, but pitching something is the concept of I'm putting an idea or an expenditure or a thought or a concept out there and hoping to get people to buy into it. I've often seen where people pitch ideas and the ultimate result is then they're placed in the strategic plan or they're placed in an operations plan. So there becomes this decision-making process first within the pitch that we're going to proceed with the idea, and then within the strategic planning that it's going to become part of our goals and objectives. And then after that, you have project meetings, where if you decide that something is going to become, you know, part of the strategic plan or the operational plan, or you pitch something and now there's going to be an implementation, you know, I've seen that the case when, for example, I've pitched a new piece of software for human resources. You know, once the HR team and technology and payroll all bought into, yes, we're going to use this new piece of software, then you create project meetings. And those meetings revolve around implementing the thing that you decided on. So the second different way that you hold meetings is to make a particular decision. And then the last reason that you hold meetings is for feedback. And I think feedback is a little bit different than, you know, information, because I think that there's an opinion piece in there. But feedback is a reactionary concept. And you have, when you talk about feedback meetings, I think the first one that comes to mind is the focus group. And we often see focus groups from a marketing perspective in business, you know, people bringing customers in to talk about their product or their service. But you also see focus groups. I use focus groups as a instructional designer to get feedback regarding particular aspects of things. For example, I designed a customer service program for one of my clients, and we created focus groups because we wanted to get some feedback from employees about things like who did they think that the customer was, and how long did they think the company wanted to create some standards for responding to emails and responding to phone messages and things like that. And so they said, you know, let's get some feedback from employees, and we did that in a focus group format. You have employee coaching meetings where you get the opportunity to provide feedback to employees. Or I even think of training on some level as being a feedback meeting, because it's an opportunity to put learning out there and get feedback from participants. You know, I'm going to use this information right away. It's valuable to me in my job. You know, those kinds of conversations happen when you conduct training. So when you think about providing information, making decisions, and allowing for feedback and discussion, then those are really the reasons that you create a meeting and you put it out there.
Well, why are you talking about...
If you don't have one of those reasons, then I don't know that you should have a meeting.
Correct. Well, while we were talking about the feedback meetings, you know, most of the managers, they do have a challenge when it comes to having or delivering that employee performance conversation, right, and how to make it more engaging. So what are your tips for those managers in order to make an engaging conversation when it comes to giving a feedback on employees' performance?
One of the things that I have always subscribed to the theory that your performance review should never be a surprise to you. So I believe that conversation should happen on a regular basis about your performance. Those feedback conversations, it doesn't necessarily have to be that formal performance conversation, but you should be talking with your employees as a manager. You should be talking with your employees on a regular basis. They should know whether or not they're doing work to the company standard. That setting expectations, letting them know that they're doing work to the company standard, I think is just part of that everyday conversation that happens in the workplace. As far as the formal, are you talking about the formal performance review process, or are you talking about the everyday conversations?
I mean, both. Even if it is formal or informal, when managers, they're really wanting to get back to their employees about their performance, they do have those challenges, right, in order to make it more engaging rather than just pointing out their flaws and in drawbacks.
Well, no news is good news is not, it should not be a management philosophy. You know, only sitting down with employees when there's something corrective to share with them. An employee will, the minute that you want to speak to an employee, they will immediately think that there's something wrong. I can't remember if you and I have talked. I can't remember if you and I have ever talked about this story, but I once worked someplace that when I scheduled a meeting for the very first time, I was a brand new employee, and I was director of human resources, and I scheduled a meeting, and I scheduled it for a conference room, and it created like havoc in the organization that I had scheduled a meeting in this particular conference room. And the reason being was I was told by my peers that that's where people get fired. That what they had done is when managers wanted to convey good information, they did it in their offices. And when they wanted to convey not so good information, they somehow always managed to do it in this conference room. And so this conference room had basically become the firing room. And if you scheduled anything else in there, people immediately made the assumption that something bad was going to happen to you when you were in that particular room. So you've got to go out there on a regular basis as a manager and talk to your employees. Tell them the good stuff. Tell them the not so good stuff. But you need to tell them both, or otherwise they're just going to make the assumption that the only time you're going to chat with them is when something is wrong. And that's not really a productive relationship. So I would say this to everybody. Think about you know, if you're struggling with doing this, you know, make it your homework exercise. Think about somebody who's done something really nice for you, like in the past couple of weeks, and just jot it down on a piece of paper, like right now while you and I are talking, just write down the name of the person and what they've done for you that's been, like, really super. Now, your homework assignment, go tell them. And all you have to do is say, hey, you know, you really made my job so much easier because you delivered this report a day early.
Well, Sherling, we are running out of time at this point, and I'm so sorry to cut you off. And thank you so much for being here with us today and sharing your valuable insights on how to make effective meetings made easy. So, Sherling, where can our audience find out more details about your book, and where can they find a copy of it, and where should they buy it from?
Oh, thank you. Essential Meeting Blueprints for Managers. You can find it on Amazon in both hard copy and Kindle. You can purchase it in the iTunes store, and you can also get it directly from the publisher, Impact.
All right. Well, thank you so much. So that was Sherling Lobby, and follow her on Twitter at Sherling_Lobby. And check out her blog. Please check out her blog, HR Bartender. I love it. So, Sherling, thank you so much again, and we look forward to having you again on the show.
Thank you.